And we're live, everyone. Welcome back to this week's episode of the Electric Podcast. I'm Fred Lambert, your host, and I'm joined at the very last minute by Seth Wintrall, who just made it to his hotel in New York to participate in the show, as he does every week. But this time, what are you doing this weekend, Seth?
So I am in Brooklyn, and I'm at the Formula E race, the finale this year for the Formula E circuit. If you're not familiar, it's the FIA. It's kind of the electric equivalent of F1. Brooklyn hosts the last event of the year, kind of like the championship. And Nissan actually invited us to go. Jameson was going to come out here for it, but he got sick. And, you know, I'm always up for a good press junket, so I'm now in Brooklyn, we're enjoying the show. I got this today. I was at Nissan and talking to their mobility people. We got to get some new information about their product lineup. It's nothing I can really print because it was kind of on background, but in the next year they're going to release something that's similar to the Kona, the Hyundai. Mm-hmm. Hyundai, what is it? The Kia Niro Hyundai Kona.
CUV, a small CUV that's similar in price as the Leaf. There's been some rumors about that already. Yeah.
Right. So theoretically, it'll have four-wheel drive. I like Nissan's four-wheel drive styling. Back in college, I had a used Nissan Pathfinder that I thought was really cool. Great car. Transmission busted, but it was old. Won't have to worry about that with electric. And then I also like the Xterra, and they have some other cool stuff. So hopefully Nissan can do some cool stuff. I think they're going to announce that at the beginning of next year, probably around Model Y time. Coincidence. we'll leave that to the viewer to decide. But
yeah, I don't know if it's going to be a Model Y competitor, just like the Nissan Leaf is not that much of a competitor with Model 3, but it's still going to be probably a good addition to the electric lineup. And I think it's going to be a lot smaller than the Pathfinder if we're comparing to to Nissan's old SUV lineup. The Juke, if you go to Europe, the Juke is insanely popular there, very popular.
Yeah.
So maybe something of a similar size, and it's the design is not for everyone. The Juke is like a love it or hate it, much like the good old Nissan Leaf design. But yeah, we have a few good questions in the chat room already that we can look at. Sasha Sharman asks, "What will Tesla do to appeal to the European market with their Tesla Semi, since all the lorries are flat face due to length restriction? Will it mean a redesign?" We did hear a little bit about that not long after the launch of the Tesla Semi last year. Jérôme Guillen, who's the lead of the Tesla Semi, ended up going to the Netherlands to talk about the Tesla Semi. And it doesn't sound like it's going to be launched in Europe like anytime soon, or like not soon after it launches officially in the U.S., which is going to be apparently next year, if we believe Tesla's current timeline. But he did say that he's going to do one to adapt it to the European market. So I don't think that he probably going to need some redesign, but not that big of a change, even though it's probably going to affect aerodynamics if you go flat. And I think Tesla Semi relies a lot on aerodynamics to get that range. So yeah, there might be some concern there for sure. What else we got? What risk do you see in Tesla opening in China? What protects their intellectual property from competitor and other knockoff brands cutting into their market share? Well, we already seen some knockoff Tesla in China. I forget the name right now. We've seen two. One that already failed, and there's a new one. I think it's Xiaopeng with the Xpeng. And this one just got like $1 billion in funding. And I think Alibaba now is even investing in it. So there's a lot of money behind it. So Tesla producing in China, Tesla not producing in China, I don't think that makes a big difference at that stage. Now, if you want to get into, like, of course, if you bring the manufacturing into China, yes, better access to the IP. But as we know, Tesla managed to do it without a joint venture partner. So it closed off their IP a lot better, I think. No one else is getting into the factory if they don't want to. Of course, there's always some opportunity for, what do you call it, industrial espionage.
Exactly. I was thinking the exact same thing. Like, there's no possible way that you can have a factory in China and not be giving the government at least every bit of information that comes in and out of that factory. I just like, unless they have like quadruple military grade VPNs coming in and out, I don't see that Tesla's secrets being protected. That said, they can, you know, they can build a Model 3 that's, you know, a few years old, and they're not going to lose any really too important IP, I don't think.
Yeah, other than like the actual like manufacturing software and stuff like that, they can already take a car, and there's already a bunch of Model 3s in China right now that have been imported by private citizens. So they can reverse engineer that already. You don't have the actual blueprint for it, but that's close enough, really. What else we got?
I forgot to mention about Nissan.
Yeah, go ahead.
They're going to release a CUV, but also their like bigger vehicles, like the Pathfinder and the Xterra or whatever, and their medium-sized trucks are going to have hybrid options in the not-so-distant future. I know.
That's exciting.
But, you know, I'm trying to gather some information here.
That's... Yeah, that was the same thing when I was at BMW last month. I mean, trying to push the hybrid thing, you know. I was falling asleep every time he was starting to talk about hybrids. I mean, it's a step up from purely gas-powered vehicles, but we're already in the realms of all-electric vehicles now, so it feels like
I kind of feel like I got the bug, the itch to go EV when I was driving my Prius, and it would turn off, and I was like, oh, this is kind of nice. And I try to, you know, trick it into not using the engine. So more hybrids, the better, I think.
Mm-hmm. We have another. Well, deliveries of the Model 3 in Canada slowed down, and the Tesla hit the 200,000 deliveries. It would make sense for sure for Tesla to concentrate them as many deliveries as possible in the U.S. for the next year in order to enable those people to get the full tax credit. And I mean, I think deliveries just in Ontario is going to slow down a lot. So that's one of the articles we wanted to get to on the podcast this week. I guess we can talk about it right now.
Yeah, that sucks.
Yeah, it sucks.
14,000 to zero. That's no even like slight wind down period. Like one day, 14,000. I mean, what about the people who like they're supposed to get their Tesla next, you know, week? Are they going to get?
Yeah, that's what I'm looking into right now. And I talked to Tesla about it, and I reach out to the Ontario government too. It's a little bit weird right now, this situation. So if you guys don't know, Ontario had a $14,000 rebate on all electric vehicles. One of the biggest, if not the biggest, direct rebate we've ever seen. I mean, probably if you add up everything that they have in Norway with like no taxes and all the other benefits they have, it probably add up to a bigger value. But in terms of like a direct rebate, we've never seen anything that close. And it did work because for a long time in Canada, so Canada, Ontario is the most populous province in Canada, but Quebec was the biggest province for EVs for a long time because we had the incentive for a while, and it became more popular in Quebec. But when Ontario brought that big incentive, started to catch up, and back in February, they took the lead for EVs in Canada, which was great. But now they're going to lose the lead because after the latest election, the Conservative Party won, and they ended up just killing the program altogether. And their logic for killing the program is pretty good because the program is financed by the cap and trade program in Ontario. Excuse me, and. Right now, their goal is to reduce gas prices down by 10 cents per liter. And to do that, they have to find other programs to kill. So they decided to kill the cap and trade program, which financed the electric vehicle incentive program. So they're literally killing the program to make gas cheaper, which will result in people using more gas. So a program that's meant to reduce gas consumption being killed to increase gas consumption.
So no good way to look at this, really.
Really, it's pretty awful. And so where things get more complicated, so the other thing, the time, of course, the timing is about the election. So they took over to the government now, and they can do whatever they want. So they did that. But the timing for Tesla is weird, because it happens right when Tesla was just blowing up the program, because they started delivering the Model 3. So even though Ontario was doing well before the Model 3 with the incentive program, so there was a lot of Bolts, a lot of Hyundai Ioniqs that were being delivered. Of course, you had your usual Volt and Tesla's vehicles. Also, the Model S and X were getting popular because of that $14,000. Even if it's a $100,000 vehicle, it makes a big difference, like for a 14%. But with the Model 3 starting to get delivered in May, so in May and June, the program blew up, and Tesla delivered over 1,000 vehicle. We don't have all the exact number yet, but it's certainly over 1,000 vehicle in just 2 months, and maybe even more than that. And so they killed the program right there and there. And then the language in it for what happens for people that already have an order, and people, it's just not clear. I'm going to read it to you just exactly. Said, so application will be accepted from dealerships, car owners, or prospective car owners only if one of the following conditions has been met. And the second condition, the two conditions are eligible vehicle that have been delivered to consumer, registered, and plated on or before July 11 will receive the incentive.
Plated.
Yeah, well, so that you get the car plated normally like the same day. So for most people, so it's not that's not that bad. But then they said inventories that dealer have on lots or orders made by dealership with manufacturer on or before July 11 will also be honored. Blah 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 blah.
Oh, so, orders.
So when I read that, I thought, okay, everybody's in the clear. Tesla opened the orders a few weeks before that for everyone. So a bunch of people order the car. So that's fine. But then I started getting emails from people from Ontario being very worried that it might actually not apply for Tesla because of the dealership thing. So then I thought, whoa, Tesla, well, Tesla does have dealership licenses in Ontario, like it does everywhere in the US and in Canada where they deliver cars.
Almost everywhere.
Yeah, there's still a few states that are pretty backward. But so I reached out to Tesla just to be sure. And Tesla themselves says they don't know exactly yet. And now they told me that they're being told by the government that they are not dealerships. So the orders didn't go through a dealership. It went directly to the manufacturer. So that might not count. So this sort of a limbo right now. We don't know exactly what's going on. And I mean, I think there might be like thousands of orders of Model 3 from Ontario right now.
Quite a few.
Yeah, because Tesla opened the orders for everyone. With the I'm in Quebec, so it doesn't matter. But it was when I ordered that's the same time the people that would be affected, and that's when everyone started to order. When I ordered, when they opened the dual motor and the performance version in Canada, so a lot of people I think could be affected by that. A real bummer. We're gonna keep looking at the story because, like we said, we don't know exactly how it's gonna play out. But yeah, that's two big stories on EV incentive this week, because that was one for Canada, but there was also the US. Last week, we talked about the fact that we were pretty disappointed that Tesla is not being open about when they're going to hit the federal tax credit threshold in the US that triggers the phase out period. They did this week. They finally did. They updated everyone. They said that they updated their page, their support page for incentive, and put a clear phase out period saying that the full $7,500 credit is going to be available until December 31st, as we expected, and then the phase out period throughout 2019. The first half of the year is going to be $3,750. The other half is going to be $1,875.
You know, I wonder if there's any way that Tesla can get, like, you know, like we said with the Ontario thing, like the $35,000 customers plated, so to speak, like registered, even if before the car comes off the line. That way they can get in under the thing, because, you know, they're not going to work through their list. And I mean, that would give them, you know, quite a big chunk of buyers who want to get their cars before the end of the year to save that $3,750.
Yeah, I mean, but at the same time, Tesla's going to be able to get a lot of cars out, I think, in the next 6 months.
Yeah, but I don't think the $35,000, like, I think there's a lot of people who want to get a $35,000 version, mm-hmm. even some people who probably haven't even signed up yet. And for those people, the, you know, we're talking about 20% off versus 10% off. It's a pretty mm-hmm. big deal.
Yeah. So,
I think, if there's any possible way that Tesla could do that, I mean, it might even be good for Tesla, because, you know, if they pay the money up front and, you know, you're not going to get your car for 3 to 6 months, if they pay that, you know, the big amount of money up front and they're willing to do that to get the big savings, then Tesla's going to have a boatload of cash coming in.
Yeah,
which they kind of need.
The language is pretty clear on that it's cars delivered.
Right.
So I don't think that's going to be a loophole that's going to work for them. And right now, well, you're bringing up a good point right now, though, because the people are looking at the $35,000 Model 3. I think at this point, you just have to assume that you're going to get the $3,700 and not the full $7,500.
Which is still a pretty nice discount. Mm-hmm. And then you add the state incentives. New York's $2,000, California's $2,500, I think. Colorado's 4,000.
Oh yeah, there's plenty of other. I'm not saying that Tesla won't deliver any standard battery pack Model 3 in 2018. There might be a few, but I just because of the way, like, there's so many orders now, and Tesla is giving like wide delivery windows. Like mine is August through October. I mean, what do you want me to do with that August through October? So if you end up, if Tesla, for example, ends up opening up orders for the standard battery pack in Q4. Then you get that 2 months to 2 to 3 months delivery window. It's way too tight. So if you're budgeting for it, you budget for that $3,700, I think.
Right.
I think it makes sense. And yeah, well, so Tesla released that on their incentive support page, but then we reached out to Tesla to confirm that means that they already hit that 200,000 units. And they said, yeah, they delivered the 200,000. So presumably in the first 2 weeks of the month. But as we discussed last time, pretty sure that Tesla pretty much the first batch of cars that were delivered in Q3 probably hit that 200,000 mark.
Yeah, and they've been really coy about that. They won't even acknowledge the idea of like gaming the system at all. But it seems like they are.
Well, you know why? I mean, as soon as you do that, people are gonna report like Tesla is trying to squeeze more money out of taxpayers and everything. So.
Oh, it's subsidy fraud boy is going to...
Yeah. We did a bunch of other things too this week about Model 3, because it was an interesting week for the vehicle. What we've been seeing, and that's what we reported back last weekend, and we've been updating through more stories in that same narrative, is that Tesla is very much, we think, going away with the anti-selling of the Model 3. So that's something that Elon used a lot last year, saying that we're not even trying to sell the Model 3. We are anti-selling it because we don't need more orders for it. We want to sell the Model S, we want to sell the Model X while we ramp up Model 3 and start to get a hold on the production ramp up. That's going away now, but that's going away mainly for the performance version of the Model 3, though. So what we reported is that Tesla is now, I think, commissioned to their sales staff to sell the Model 3, but just the performance version. So Model 3 sells, if you guys are not familiar with the way, like, there's been some misconception about that, right? For a while, people thought that Tesla staff didn't get any commission for selling vehicles. Did you hear that, Seth?
Yeah, I thought that was the case initially.
Yeah, a lot of people thought that. But there's commission for owner advisors, who are the one that, like, take over the sales process. So there's a few different people, but the owner advisor, the main salesperson. And they do get commission for vehicles, different vehicles, different trims get different commission. And there weren't any of that for the Model 3, even though Tesla already delivered like over 30,000 of them. All the sales were mainly arranged through the inside sales team at Tesla. So like Seth, when you got your Model 3, you dealt with the guy in Vegas, that Tesla sales team in Vegas to get your delivery and everything. now it's changing, but just for the performance version. So a source familiar with the matter told us that Tesla is giving out $300 commission for each sales of the new Model 3 performance version. But because of that, still that process thing, that it's not like directly with an owner and advisor and everything, apparently Tesla is also giving that commission to the entire store team. So if a store in itself sells on more Model 3 performance version, they're going to get more money, which is a cool way to, like, it's pretty much communism.
Yeah. Oh, it's not necessarily communism. It's the store itself. So
yeah. Yeah. If the store is a country in itself, then everybody gets the same amount.
Yeah. But it's a commission for sure, but it's a teamwork commission. Like, you're not going to sabotage your colleague because, you know, as long as you guys make a sale, you get the commission. I think it's a good thing.
Yeah. And that's the thing too. They also get a base salary. So it's not like a lot of other dealership experience where most of your money comes from commission, almost all your money. So most of the people are it's pretty split between the salary and the commission. But yeah, so that's a sign that Tesla is trying to sell the Model 3, at least the performance version, if they are giving out commission for it. A big change on that front. Then what happened also is that Tesla opened up the online design studio for pretty much everyone. So everyone now can place an order. You don't have to go to the revision process, because right now you have to. Before that, you had to place the $1,000 for a reservation. Then Tesla send you an email to configure the vehicle, which was pretty much instantaneous for a while. And from that email, you configure your car, and then you place your $2,500 deposit, which this one is not refundable. Now you don't go to the first $1,000 reservation. You just go directly to the ordering process. If you want to order a rear-wheel drive long-range battery pack, or a long-range battery pack, all-wheel drive, or performance version. Standard battery pack is still, like, you cannot click on it. It's not accessible in the design studio, but it's still there. I know that a bunch of people this week reported that it started with the shorts. It started on Twitter with the shorts, but now it's getting into the media that, oh, Tesla remove all mention of the $35,000 Model 3 and blah, blah, blah. So, like, Tesla is not making the car anymore. That's all nonsense. It started with the shorts and a few media picked it up, but Tesla changed their website this week, but the design studio, there's still a mention for the standard battery pack, and the standard battery pack is still planned to be at $35,000 starting price. Of course, you can still add plenty of options and make it more expensive, but that didn't change. But now, yeah, everyone can access that, which doesn't change much other than the fact that there's no reservation process, which is nice. And the last thing that's, again, works with the narrative that Tesla is not anti-selling the Model 3 anymore is that a big fleet of test drive vehicle is coming. We reported that Tesla had a pilot program for test drive in the Bay Area. Four store had a small test drive fleet, and they were taking requests for appointment for test drives, and they give almost 500 test drive in a week, and apparently it was a successful program. And so if you went on the page on the Model 3, you could actually directly get and take an appointment for a test drive right now. And Tesla apparently got 30,000 requests for test drive in a week.
Oh, wow.
Which is pretty cool. And most of those cars, as I understand it, is going to be performance version again. So Tesla is going to get people inside the performance car, try to sell that. If you don't want to pay that price, you can... even though you try the performance version, I mean.
So do you think Tesla will be able to meet a demand for the performance Model 3 this year?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think it's going to be very popular. Like, I think a lot of people is going to buy it for sure. But, I don't think it can be like, I'd be surprised if it's even like 10% of the production right now, production capacity. Like, that's 500 per week. That's right. A lot of.
But I mean, they're incentivized to make as many of those as possible, because theoretically they make the most margin from that. I think that's.
Yeah, but it's a $70,000 car.
Right. But you don't think that there's going to be too many people ordering that?
I think it's still a lot, like 500 per week of a performance car. It's a lot, I think. Do Tesla sells that right now for the P100D, for example, or is it like they never? Okay. That's a bummer. Tesla never
breaks it out.
Break down all the cells like that. It gave us a pretty good idea, but they build a fleet 100 performance version Model 3. The Tesla's goal is to have one in each store by the end of the month. So you could if you get an appointment for a test drive, you should be able to get like in the next 2 months try the Model 3. And that's going to change a lot of things because Tesla had over almost 500,000 reservations at one point for the Model 3, with most of those people not seeing the car in person, nevertheless driving it. So it is going to change a lot of things. Tesla says it's going to change so much that it's going to grow, the new order is going to grow faster than the production ramp, which is right now at 5,000 units. So they're saying that we're going to get more than 5,000 orders per week. That's impressive. That's a lot, I think. Is it impossible?
So not only are they going to have the 100 cars, or would you say 1,000 cars? No, 100 cars.
They already built 100, but they want to have one in each store by the end of the month. So I don't think there are 100 stores in North America.
No,
but I don't know how many cars per store, because I think you need a fleet to have a good test drive fleet. Yeah.
So there's also Model 3, like people's neighbors and people's friends are getting Model 3s. And that's actually, in my opinion, probably a better way to sell Model 3s.
Definitely.
So I think people are going to start to say, okay, I think I better get in line for this thing if they really want one. So maybe Tesla is never going to actually catch up with demand on the Model 3 because, you know, more people are ordering faster than they're.
Yeah, it's going to be exponential. Like, one Model 3 gets into a neighborhood and then like three neighbors wants it and so on. Yeah, that's not impossible. The other thing I thought was that it would be cool if Tesla brings back the thing that you can like change the type of powertrain from the screen for the Model 3. So even if all the test vehicle or performance vehicle, like you could change it as, oh, I just want the rear wheel drive one and long range battery pack or standard battery pack. And I'm just going to order a standard battery pack instead, or reserve it and order it whenever I can order. A lot of people are waiting for that standard battery pack, man. That's the other thing too. Like
I'm waiting for it.
Yeah, you're. That's the thing. You want the standard with the all-wheel drive, right? Is that what you want?
That's kind of what I wanted. I mean, we have a Model X for long trips. So, my commute is 5 miles round trip. So, on a typical day, I don't need. You know, I could get by on like a 5 kilowatt hour battery, let alone a 50 kilowatt hour battery.
Yeah, and you want that light battery is going to be a pretty efficient car, I think.
Right. So I don't know if we knew the weights before, but I saw the other day they had the weights of the Model 3 with 50 versus 75, and it's over 500 pounds less weight. So that's like having two or three, or you know, depending on how big your friends are, friends in the car, just get out.
Yeah. Yeah, that can make a difference. For sure, it's going to be more efficient, the smaller battery pack version. Could even be the high-end electric, maybe. I don't know. Has a 28 kilowatt-hour battery pack, the high-end electric. So it's a big difference. It's still like a lot bigger energy capacity inside the car. But there's also...
It was pretty close, wasn't it?
Yeah, the long-range version was already pretty close. Maybe like 10 or something. Like, yeah.
I mean, it's sad, but I only remember the miles per gallon E. So yeah. It was like 126 and 129 or something like that, I want to say.
Yeah, I want to say it was like close to 10 behind. It was very close. Well, very close. The Ioniq was like a big jump for anyone else. Like the i3 wasn't close. The Bolt EV wasn't close. So the Model 3 brought it a lot closer to that record efficiency. But yeah.
And still the battery of the Ioniq is still half the size of the Model 3 50 kilowatts. So it's still like, if it even comes close, it'll be impressive.
Yeah. It will show that Tesla has like other things than batteries that make efficiency better. So you can have your motor itself, can have your aerodynamic. You can have weight from everything else aside from the batteries.
Tires
too. Yeah, that's one thing that I'm worried about my performance version car that I have on order, because the tires that come stock on the Model 3 are very efficient. Like, they're very geared toward efficiency.
Well, you can do what Elon said and let out some air pressure, get it down to 39.
Yes, yeah, but no, but that's not my concern. My concern is that with the performance version, it comes with performance tires too. So I'm thinking those might be a lot less efficient than the stock ones. So, Tesla advertised the range. So that was the other thing I wanted to talk about this week, because Tesla advertised the range for the all-wheel drive and the performance version for the same range as the rear-wheel drive long-range battery pack version, which is 310 miles. But the way they got that, didn't I put the article somewhere in there? Yes, I did. Okay. So the way they got that, it's from the EPA cycles that they tested, but the EPA cycles got more than 310 miles. They got 334 miles. So Tesla could advertise the long-range rear-wheel drive Model 3 at 334 miles, and that will still be through EPA-rated range. They didn't. They asked to be reduced at 310 miles so they can advertise with that. And to be honest, from what I hear from most owners, they're getting pretty much the EPA rated range. So the 310s make sense to do that. Not the 334, not more or less. 310 made sense. So your range is pretty accurate. Of course, it depends on how you drive. A lot of people drive differently, and that affects the range. But what was curious this week is that we got the first test back for the performance version and all-wheel drive version, which got the same, but there's a little caveat. We're not talking about an EPA cycle test. It was a carb test. It was a carb test for the urban dynamometer driving schedule. So it's not, they're not actually driving on the road testing something. It's just on the dyno. So not even close to what you get on real road experience. They got 455 miles. So you have to compare that 405 miles to the same test that they did for the rear-wheel drive long-range Model S. And that's where it gets interesting, because that test, the rear-wheel drive Model 3, got 495 miles. So a 40 miles difference on that test.
How do you test a all-wheel drive on a dyno? I guess you get a double dyno.
Probably, yeah. You have to. But so that 40 miles difference, that might explain the difference with the 334 miles reduced to 310. So you can get the same range with the higher hand version, while you can advertise it, but even though you get less. But my concern now is we heard from Model 3 owners that they do get 310 miles. So about that, when pushing the car on a full charge. So then, would you get less range with the all-wheel drive version and performance version? That's the big question.
Well, I mean, so when they initially had the D event, one of the kind of cool things that Elon said was that with electric, you can get actually more miles per watt hour on electric four-wheel drive, because you can have different gear ratios. Mm-hmm. So I think the D version had a very small percentage higher mileage in the Model S. But it's interesting that it doesn't appear that with the Model 3 that there's any difference. And maybe that's because they have two different types of motor. One, the back is a permanent magnet.
Yeah, that's right.
So I don't know. It's just cool that you don't lose anything.
That was one of the explanations that all people looked at. But you still have two different efficiencies. So with software-based system, you could still normally get some gain. And I don't know. I'm curious if Tesla is underselling thing a little bit. Yeah, still. Even though we just talked about this, not stopping anti-selling the Model 3. But even though like you start pushing it in terms of performance, I think they could unlock some more with software. I don't think it's impossible.
Yeah, and you know, just anecdotally, I've had a Model S, a Model X, and a Model 3 now. And the Model 3 is the first one that I can rely, because I'm a little lead footed. Mm-hmm. I can drive that as hard as I want, and I still get very close to the Tesla stated range. Whereas the Model X, it was almost impossible to get what it said it, you know, what I had. Mm-hmm. And the Model S was a little bit more closer, but the Model 3 is like, you know, I can gun it, and I'm still pretty close to what my normal range is.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of people are saying that now. It's interesting, really. I'm curious to see when the IPA number is going to come out for the all-wheel drive version. That's going to be a better indication, I think. It should be pretty soon, because if Tesla start to deliver the car, they need the EPA approval. They need to have the Moroni sticker,
right? The sticker,
yeah. So EPA needs to put their seal approval on that. So they need to look at all of Tesla's test number and everything. So
yeah, that should be any day now.
Yeah, really, yeah, literally any day. The other big Tesla news this week is that we finally got a confirmation on that Gigafactory number 3 that is coming to China. That thing has been rumored for years now. Everything started lining up to be close to an announcement in the past few months, as Tesla created the new business entity in Shanghai, where there's a trade free zone where they can test new laws and relax their protectionist restriction that force new foreign automakers and foreign companies in general to partner with manufacturing companies that are local. And they're going to accelerate the removal of that old restriction in that specific trade region. And Tesla got a deal with the local government in order to start the construction of a company there. Well, they got the approval for the moment to make that Gigafactory. Now they have to have the regular environmental approval and things like that. But the deal was sealed this week with local government for a factory that's going to have a capacity of 500,000 cars per year. So something similar to what we thought Tesla could get up to in Fremont. They're not there yet. But it's pretty significant capacity. Also, if we account the fact that Elon Musk said that every future Tesla Gigafactory is going to also have battery cell production and complete vehicles. So that's 500,000 cars and the cells that goes into those 500,000 cars.
It's going to be a big factory.
Yeah, that's saying that the Gigafactory 3 is going to be the equivalent of Gigafactory 1 combined with Fremont. And those buildings are like number 4 and 3 on the biggest building on the planet.
It's going to be big.
Yeah, it's going to be a huge, huge plant, unless they make it a lot more efficient. They can make it smaller. I don't know. We didn't see any plan yet. But they want to be pretty aggressive on the timeline here. When the construction start, they didn't say exactly, because like I said, they still need a few other approval. But they said the near future, they're going to start in the near future. And production, they aim for production to start in 2 years, which is pretty insane, really. Yeah, it's insane in China, though. We know that China, they are pretty quick to get something up and started.
Right. But we're also talking about Elon time, so...
Yeah, Elon Tesla time.
I think they could do 2 years if they started with like the final assembly, kind of.
You brought that up. That was a good point, yeah.
You know, if they get, like a mostly built car, like they do, I think they do this in Norway a little bit, where they have...
In the Netherlands, in Tilburg.
Yes. So, you know, they get a mostly built car and they do the final assembly.
The production line in Tilburg is fairly small, and I don't know exactly what they had to the car, but like you said, it's called final assembly. And they do that to make the car local in order to circumvent some import duties.
Right. And, that's a big deal in China with the 25% for normal cars, but...
Now it's going to increase to 40%, and that's another story that I want to talk about, because due to that increase, Tesla is increasing the price of the Model S and X in China. So we thought that that 25% was going to go down to 15% in the early stages of the trade discussion between the U.S. and China. So if you guys remember, Elon Musk tweeted with Donald Trump, and they started talking about it on Twitter. And Donald Trump thought, oh, that was a brilliant idea. And Elon Musk is on board with me with the trade war and everything. And to most people's surprise, it seemed to actually work, because China said that they were going to reduce that that tariff to 15% from 25%. But then sure enough, Trump announced another list of new import duties for China, and then China retaliated again. So now it's up to 40%, and Tesla already adjusted the price, because otherwise they don't make any money on the Model S and X that are going to China.
Yeah, I don't know. That's not going to end well, I don't think.
Yeah. And that's for a car that already costs like between $100,000 and $200,000 in the equivalent in Chinese yen.
Right.
For the Model 3, it'd be even worse. So Tesla never made it clear if they had any plan to start sending some Model 3 in China from the Fremont factory for the Chinese market and before having local production. They were never clear about that. At this point, I think they're going to have to, even with the tariff increase, because 2 years from now, so that's going to be past 2020, and that's very ambitious. So I'd be very surprised if there's a car coming out of a Tesla factory in China before 2021, unless you're right about this final assembly speculation. So
if they do it in the Netherlands, why wouldn't they just do it in China as well? It doesn't seem like...
Well, you have to pass. So maybe that works with the regulators in the Netherlands, but maybe it wouldn't work in China. So I don't know. That's really the nitty gritty stuff. But let's assume it doesn't. You won't see a Model 3 coming out of China until 2021. So that doesn't work. Tesla's going to have to send some cars from Fremont to the Chinese market at some point. But those cars that's going to be a big difference. For a somewhat affordable vehicle that's just not going to be affordable at all at this point, especially if they still don't get access to the EV incentive there because they're not locally produced.
You know, what's interesting, though, is, I was actually talking to a guy who's based in the middle of China, and he said, you know, right now in the cities, if you want to buy a registration for a gas-powered vehicle, it's like over 10 grand.
Mm-hmm.
But an electric vehicle is free, the registration. So, you know, I wonder if this thing is going to be a good test of the offset. Like, instead of getting, this is kind of something that they should do in the U.S. or what? Maybe not exactly that. They should
good luck
tax gas. I know it's never going to happen, but the amount that you save by going electric, I wonder if that offsets the increased tax. I guess we'll find out.
Yeah. I mean, and there's a bunch of other similar things in China. Well, I think it works by cities too. Like, so
right.
A city implement those kinds of incentives. So there's some of them that makes a lot of sense, other it's not that big of a deal. It's, like you said, it's 10,000 to get your registration. In some cities, it's 10,000, but you're not even sure you're going to get, like, it's 10,000 if you get your registration, but they have a lottery system to get a registration for a non-electric vehicle. So,
you know, calling
them that non-electric vehicle.
I mean, I think that's actually what might happen in the U.S. because, you know, we're looking at the federal government being totally clueless, but, you know, states like California and, you know, the West Coast states and New York and a couple others seem to be very, very forward. The citizens are very forward on electric vehicles. So, you know, saving the registration costs, you know, states could have their own carbon tax. Like, a lot of things could happen to make, you know, New York a lot like Norway or California a lot like more like Norway. So it's not totally up to the federal government in the U.S. So, and
yeah.
Theoretically, the flip side is Canada, you know, like Quebec, you still have an incentive. In Ontario, you don't.
A lot of people are also pushing for a federal incentive in Canada, especially now that Ontario just backed away and they're the biggest province.
Can you drive to Montreal, buy a car, and then drive to Ontario? But
no, I mean, there's a bunch of restriction based on where you register the car.
Okay. So
that's the biggest issue. And in Quebec, the rebate is direct too, if I remember correctly. You can get it directly from your purchase. It's not like a tax credit like in the US.
Okay.
So that's always a big advantage. But I think you're being very optimistic for the US there, because a lot of the states are going the different way, actually.
Right.
On your registration, they are charging you more if you're an EV, because their logic is that they maintain the road based on the money they get from the gas tax. And if you're not paying for gas, but you still have a vehicle, you have to maintain the road. So they actually get you on the registration instead of making it an incentive. It's completely the other way around.
Right. So, I mean, that's a little bit short-sighted, obviously. Mm-hmm. But another argument is that you pay taxes, you just pay it to the electric, you know, to the grid.
Exactly. That's a way better way to look at
it. So you're still paying taxes. I mean, you pay quite a bit of taxes on electricity. So, you know, you take that percentage, like, you know, whatever tax you get on a kilowatt hour, and you think about, like, well, you know, 20% of my electricity charges is taxes. That's quite a bit more than anybody's paying on gas. Like, I think anybody would be happy to have parity there. Like, okay, I pay 20% on my electricity for tax, why don't we just do 20% on gas? I don't think anybody would have a problem with that.
Yeah. The only way is that do you have now to differentiate between a kilowatt hour used in a car versus a kilowatt hour used for a non-car? Because then you're going to increase taxes on people that don't have cars too by doing that, if you still have a utility bill.
There is ways to do that. You could have like a separate meter or whatever, but I don't think that's going to really happen. I think, you know, there's just like a standard tax on electricity. I don't think the electricity should change. I think they just need to say, oh, like, you're, you know, if you're spending a lot of time on the road, but we are getting money from you, like, either from your home, or you're charging at work and they're paying taxes on the electricity to get there, or at the supercharger, wherever, there's taxes from electricity. So, you know, as long as you have a standard there, there's money coming in. You know, there's a lot more electricity being used. Take some of that tax money that's coming in, that extra tax money that's coming in, and divert it to roads.
Yeah, sure. I think that's a good idea. And speaking of electric utilities and electricity, the Powerwall 2 Founder Series, I'm sure you guys forget about that. That was 2 years ago that they announced this thing. They're just now finally installing that Powerwall 2 Founder Series signed by Elon, friends, and JB. So the owner of the very first one sent out a tweet with the installation, and he's unveiling it and pulling the plastic paper, which is always a very enjoyable feeling when you get a new product. If you guys remember, I think that was part of the referral program back in 2016. It was one of the prizes then, and it has been one of the prizes since then too, like in a bunch of different programs, including, like, I think this current one too. Like, for a while, they removed the Founder Series thing and you can get a Powerwall to the referral program. Then they stopped that, and like, there was a Powerwall Founder Series. Then they switched just to Powerwall 2. And the last program, they brought it back with a Founder Series 1, which is red. And like I said, has the signatures from the three top executives at Tesla. And no deliveries at all. And as you guys know, a Tesla product that is Founder Series, normally that's the very first product that Tesla delivers, the very first version of that product that Tesla delivers. So like the Model X Founder Series, for example, that was the first 50 Model X to be delivered. Same thing with the Model S. There were no Founder Series on the Model 3, as far as I know.
I think you're saying you want your Founder Series Powerwall.
Yeah, well, officially they are on your account. They are all on your account. So, and I thought that would be better, since you're in the US. You can get you should be able to get delivery faster, I think, like, because I think it's not just delivery; it's an installation too. So they install them on your home. So that's the thing.
Yeah, that's actually probably about double the cost, or double the
almost really.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they when the homeowner sent us that, I reached out to Tesla to confirm yet they started the rollout. So I said, when is going to get to New York? Like, when are you going to be able to get there? And he said, they don't know. So I wouldn't count on it happening anytime soon. I mean, a while back, you had some people looking to install a Powerwall at your home.
Yeah.
That never panned out, right?
No, they ended up getting a job at Sonnen Battery. And then they called me to install a Sonnen Battery.
Are you serious?
Literally the same people. The same
people from Tesla kept your information when they went to Sonnen and called you back and said, hey, if I remember correctly, you were looking for a home battery pack.
Yeah.
Really? That's shady.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
You just, you know, you take your CRM software with you, I guess, if you're...
Well, that's pretty much illegal, I think.
Yeah.
I think Tesla is suing someone for something similar.
Sounds familiar, yeah.
Just right now. Yeah, speaking of Martin Tripp, this week Martin Tripp went back to the media because he hired some lawyer. Yeah, the lawyer, because he filed a complaint with the SEC in the U.S. So he's trying to get Tesla investigated by the SEC over the data that he stole from Tesla. And he stole them for being a whistleblower. So basically, he went to the media saying that he was a whistleblower with that. But it never went through the proper channel to blow the whistle first. So now he's doing it the other way around. Like now he's going to the SEC to their whistleblower program in order to sort of legitimize the fact that he's a whistleblower.
Yeah. I mean, so to me, it's kind of a shame on a couple levels because it feels like he's using the whistleblower program to like save his ass from getting sued. Because his initial claims didn't really pan out.
But he's using the same claims and through the whistleblower program too. So right. That's a thing.
So, but it's like, it's bad because there are real whistleblowers out there. And he's kind of giving them a bad name, theoretically. So it's doubly bad that he's, you know, clearly trying to hurt the company, but he's also hurting real whistleblowers out there.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and he hired the guy that was a real whistleblower. He hired a guy that was a lawyer for a real whistleblower for the Monsanto company, which ended up resulting in a SEC violation with a big payout. So now he's looking to get a payout from the SEC too for that. But in terms of the SEC, like they couldn't care less about the scrap metal thing that, like you said about the Gear Factory, that no one was ever able to prove that it was a big deal at all. Like you get scrap from a big manufacturing facility, so that the SEC wouldn't look into that. But now he's making like also a new claim, excuse me, that Tesla overreported Model 3 production. So that certainly would be something that the SEC would be into. But he never released any information about that. I mean, like the information that he sent to Business Insider and the information that he sent, or if he sent the information to Business Insider or CNBC, which was the two publications that he sent information to, they never reported that Tesla was over-reporting Model 3 production.
Yeah, and something that he did report or he did send to them was that Tesla was using punctured batteries.
Yeah.
The Model 3s, which... seemed like kind of a BS thing from the beginning.
Yeah, who wins from that? Like, yeah. No one does.
So, we don't know the full extent, and I'm sure that will come out. But right now, from what we've heard from both sides, it seems like this guy's pretty shady and probably should.
Yeah, if you don't believe us, just read things directly from the guy. I mean, you can read his email in the lawsuit that we posted. You can read he has a Twitter account now, so just go to his Twitter account and read his Twitter. The guy doesn't sound very stable at this point. I mean, he sounds like a petulant child, basically. Like, yeah.
Yeah, and yeah, that's the other thing. His public comments are really like very childish, which, you know, in the age of Trump, I don't know if I guess that's just normal, but yeah.
No, he said that Elon was more like Trump, so yeah. You're putting it back on him. But yeah, that was another development this week. We didn't get into it on electric much because it's just I mean, it sounds like it's going to be a long saga. There's going to be plenty of other things like that. So at some point, we're probably going to do a recap about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's pretty much it, guys, for this week's episode. I'm going to let Seth get back to his fun three-day weekend in New York for the Formula E, which is a doubleheader this weekend, guys. If you want to follow the Formula E this weekend, you have two different races, right?
Actually, yeah, and it's kind of interesting. Like, I'll be honest with you, I didn't pay much attention to it, which is weird because I was part of the FIA about a decade ago, and this is an FIA event. Mm-hmm. But there's something where the audience can give the drivers a boost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
which I think I knew about, but then I forgot about it, and then I was like, well, that seems like cheating or unfair. But
fan boost, yeah.
Yeah, fan boost, which, you know, that's kind of a cool thing. And, you know, Formula E is pretty cool. Like, if you're into racing, it's very much an engineers and racers sport because, you know, you like it in Formula E, you have they give you like the battery size and they give you the tires.
Mm-hmm.
But you can have your motor, your inverter, your differential, like some.
Not yet, though. Not this season.
Next season. Right.
Yeah.
But you get to choose gears. So you can have six gears, you can have zero gears.
Mm-hmm.
You can, you know, and I can't remember if you can change them per race. Because like in Monaco, you got those big hills and, you know, maybe mm-hmm. you need a couple gears for that. But it's just interesting because, you know, you're given these pieces and you have to like get the power to the wheels and you know, everybody gets the same size battery pack and kind of the same size car. So it's definitely an engineer sport, and it's also kind of a driver sport because you're pretty even on the field, you know, the cars you're racing.
And then you get that fan boost.
Yeah, then you got to get that fan boost. Which is, it's just so video game like.
Yeah, but, exactly. But
then also this year, like this is the last year and this will be the last race where drivers actually get out of the car and go to the other car.
Mm-hmm.
So you get every team has two cars, and you know, halfway through the race or whatever, the driver like goes in the pit, and instead of the wheels changing, he just jumps out and gets into another car, which is, you know, kind of funny and hilarious. But next year they're going to have like a kind of a real size battery pack, and it's going to make it the whole way around. But there's a lot of strategy in racing Formula E, because I mean there's strategy in you know, the regular F1 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
About saving fuel and not, you know, not having to visit the pit stop or whatever, but it's even more so obviously because electric batteries aren't as energy dense as petroleum. So you know, where you're going to regen, you don't want to really ever hit your brakes or hit your brakes as little as possible. You want to regen as much as you can.
But they do break a lot.
Oh, they have to. I mean, you know, you're racing, but you know, if you want to be able to go hardcore, you have to be able to regen whenever you can. So they're trying to optimize, and it's all, you know, kind of mathematics, but it's, you know, it's a smart game. Like, it's pretty cool. And, you know, like, you know, we're on this press tour, we're getting to see like the cars, and the car, you know, they're so small. And this is like all F1 cars. They're like super small and cramped. And the guys like, and you know, they're doing these turns that are so fast and so like last second, you know, I don't know how they do it. You have to have like cat like reflexes and be really good at this stuff. So
you're less too, because if you hit the wall,
yeah, you're dead. Although they have, you know, they have a very protective
cage. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, it's mildly entertaining. I'm not a big race guy, car races, just generally speaking, but I am kind of excited to learn about all these, because you actually can see how much battery they have in each car. I don't know if that's this year or next year, but you know, as a fan, you're going to be able to see like, oh, he's
on the screen. Down.
Yeah. So that's kind of exciting. I'm looking forward to it. I think it'll be fun.
Yeah. Well, you might get also a report from that on Electric next week.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, definitely. All right. So check back on Electric, guys. And thanks a lot for listening. Thanks a lot to our Patreon supporter at patreon.com/electric. It's helping us a lot. And thanks a lot for everybody that's listening and watching on YouTube. We're going to see you same time next week.